As we mark Martin Luther King Jr. Day, the first African-American president is leaving office. When Obama was first inaugurated, it was seen, as writer Jelani Cobb said, as a kind of moral momentum, King's life and his promise of a dream fulfilled. But we enter this week with President-elect Donald Trump tweeting insults at a man who walked with King, Congressman John Lewis. Lewis called Trump's presidency illegitimate because of Russian interference. Trump blasted back on Twitter that Lewis's district was crime-infested, which people who live in the thriving city of Atlanta saw as racist. So where are we on King's dream? Before that exchange, Peniel Joseph, the African-American historian and professor of public affairs at the University of Texas, wrote in Newsweek that triple threats to humanity, racism, militarism, and materialism that King cited near the end of his life have increased, not diminished. Peniel joins us now. And Professor Joseph, Donald Trump's supporters would say this current ugliness comes from John Lewis calling a presidency illegitimate. Your thoughts?
I think it's part of a larger disturbing pattern in terms of Donald Trump's view and relationship with the African-American community. I'm going back to his father, who's the entrepreneur and real estate developer, Fred Trump. There were accusations and allegations of discrimination in their real estate empire, and they had to basically settle with the Justice Department after a series of lawsuits in the mid-1970s. So I think that Donald Trump himself views African-Americans with distrust and really relegates all of us, irrespective of social economic class, because there's a thriving black upper middle class, relegates all of us to being in these ghettos and what he calls inner cities.
You know, people in Atlanta, the district, John Lewis's district, are saying, well, wait a second, we have Coca-Cola, we have CNN, we have a thriving upper and middle class black population.
Trump's notion of Chicago as a metaphor for the inner city and that African Americans are just killing each other, it really sells well to his own constituency, but it's not reality. We have a multiracial, multi-class, even within the black community public sphere that's actually thriving. Not everybody is marginalized. Not everybody is incarcerated. So we face institutional racism, but we don't all face it in the same manner.
Well, you mentioned the 1973 Justice Department lawsuit against Trump management, which he was president of. They were accused of violating the Fair Housing Act, which was passed partly in tribute to Martin Luther King and his work. So it seems as if a lot of paths go to King, even from present day. But the title of your piece in Newsweek is The Martin Luther King That America and Obama Ignore. So you are holding President Obama accountable as well. Let's explain that. The piece starts with a reference to President Obama's final State of the Union address last January. Let's listen to the section where Obama is appealing to all Americans to add their voices to the public debate.
Voices that help us see ourselves not first and foremost as black or white or Asian or Latino, not as gay or straight, immigrant or native born, not Democrat or Republican, but as Americans first, bound by a common creed. Voices Dr. King believed would have the final word. Voices of unarmed truth and unconditional love.
What's wrong with that?
No, there's nothing wrong with that. This has to do with my criticism of Obama has to do with really his policies and not going far enough, because what King offers us is a real searing critique of the flaws and shortcomings within American democracy. But he also asks all of us to look at ourselves and see how we're participating in these machines of materialism and militarism and racism. And I think Obama, he's done great speeches, but I think in a policy sense, at times, he has not gone far enough, whether it's we think about the criminal justice system, mass incarceration, whether we think about talking about poverty. King dies in Memphis, Tennessee. He's assassinated helping sanitation workers who are on strike. Obama's had to be much more of a pragmatic politician than the kind of crusader for truth and justice and love that King was during his lifetime.
Well, one's the leader of a whole country. One was an activist. I mean, is that putting too much of a burden on Barack Obama? There's been a lot of writing about this that, you know, he wrestled with how much can I talk about the black population as issues like Trayvon Martin came up, the young man killed in Florida, when I have to represent all people.
Well, you know, I think he's had it both ways. On one level, he adopted the mantle of King for many voters On the other side, he says he's president of all people. So I think when it comes to King's legacy, you have to embrace the entire legacy. I think what we are more comfortable with, Robin, is picking and choosing and saying, well, we agree with nonviolence. And then we stop short when King talks about economic redistribution. The greatness of King's legacy is that the ideas, they transcend presidents and election cycles, and they force us to confront this idea of the beloved community, and this community that abandons war, that abandons violence, that abandons materialism in favor of a real love ethic, which King said was connected to public policy and legislation and legal breakthroughs, but transcended those because we were going to change minds and hearts at the same time.
Well, we've talked about this before, the fact that there's the early King who primarily focused on civil rights and was the, if I may, the good black that people could put their arms around because he was for nonviolence. But towards the end of his life, he was embracing things like some of the black power protests that were led by Stokely Carmichael. He still rejected violence, but he was embracing, as you write, a more dynamic militancy and impatience of the younger activists. And here he is speaking out against the Vietnam War in his 1967 speech at Riverside Church in New York.
Life and history give eloquent testimony to the fact conflicts are never resolved without trustful give and take on both sides. Tonight, however, I wish not to speak with Hanoi and the National Liberation Front, but rather to my fellow Americans.
Peniel Joseph, talk more about this King that you feel people are less, leaders are less comfortable with.
Yeah, this is the King who's really speaking truth to power. So this is a King who's being rejected by Newsweek, who's being rejected by Time Magazine, the New York Times. They say he shouldn't mix civil rights and Vietnam. And it is a King who never embraces violence, but actually understands and embraces aspects of the Black Power movement's radical critique of liberal democratic capitalism in the United States. So this is a King who's really a champion for poor people, economic justice, multiracial, multicultural democracy, but who, even as he's still singing We Shall Overcome, the public's response is going to be much more reticent. Mm. The political response is going to be much more reticent. And really, when we think about the civic response until his assassination, is much more reticent. This is a King who's really a nonviolent revolutionary that makes the American public much more uncomfortable than the King at the March on Washington.
Well, and am I reading correctly that you are drawing a line here? You're saying that as King embraced some of this more dynamic militancy, you'd like to see America and Obama embrace Black Lives Matter.
No, absolutely. And I think that that is absolutely in that Kingian tradition of that love ethic. And for King, justice was what love looked like in public. And so when we think about the Black Lives Matter movement and really all these different social movements that have been coming out in Standing Rock and in other places, these are movements about radical humanism. And that's King's philosophy. Just because you put the word black in front of Lives Matter, it doesn't make it less universal. It makes it more universal. And in this case, you just get to the universal through the particular.
Let's think about that for a second. Get to the universal through the particular. When Black Lives Matter, all lives matter.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. And I think what King teaches us and reminds us when he talks about the great wells of democracy from the letter from the Birmingham jail is that the United States, this democracy is something that's always living, growing, and breathing. And he envisioned a more expansive democracy than the founders had ever conceived or imagined. And I think that's the greatness of King, that he saw greatness within the country, but he was willing to say that we all had to work for it. And he was willing to call out the country's shortcomings, even though it's a country that he loved enough to die for and give his life for to transform it.
That's Peniel Joseph, professor of public affairs at the University of Texas, reflecting on this Martin Luther King Day. Peniel, Professor Joseph, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, Robin.